Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.
First things first, we would like to thank W.J. Pierce for creating and performing our music. This is Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. I'm your host, Alistair Cross. I'm usually here with my co-host and collaborator, Tamara Thorne, but she's off for tonight, so we're doing things a little bit differently. But before we get into that, I just want to take a brief moment to let you know that you can learn more about what we do at our websites, which are alistaircross.com and tamarathorne.com. You can visit our mutual blog at thornandcross.wordpress.com, or if you tweet, our handles are at crossalistair and at tamarathorne. You can also visit us on Haunted Nights Live on Facebook. For more information on the show, you can visit Authors on the Air on Facebook, Twitter, and at AuthorsOnTheAir.com. This is a broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. Tonight, I'm joined with my co-host tonight is the one and only Q.L. Pierce. And before we introduce tonight's guest, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Q.L. Pierce. Her many accomplishments include, but are not limited to, being the author of the hit series Scary Stories for Sleepovers, Titan A.E., The Land Before Time, and over 150 other books for middle grade and young adult readers. Her work has won the Carter G. Woodson Gold Medal, the Moonbeam Children's Book Award, and many others. Her multi-award-winning book, Red Bird Sings, received praise from Publishers Weekly, the School Library Journal, and the Library Media Connection. Be sure to check out her new book, Spine Chillers, available in ebook and a paperback at Amazon. You can learn more about Q and what she does at qlpierce.com. All right, welcome aboard, Q. Thanks for being here, and I'm going to let you take it.
Well, thank you so much, Alistair. It's great now that it's getting darker earlier. You know, it's like
I know
really getting in the mood. You know, but
it's true.
Okay, we have a wonderful guest for tonight. Jessica Freeberg is the author of paranormal fiction and narrative nonfiction works focused on creepy legends and dark moments in history, including one of the books is Monsters of the Midwest. To blend her love of writing with her passion for history and the paranormal, Jessica founded Ghost Stories, Inc., I-N-K, a group of authors, illustrators, and filmmakers who visit historic locations and perform paranormal investigations for creative inspiration. Her work in the paranormal field led her to be a paranormal news correspondent for Darkness Radio, as well as a producer on the documentary Haunted State, Whispers from History Past. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I have read Piper, and we will talk about Piper and some of your other books. But I was very surprised when I went on your website to learn that your first publications were poems in children's magazines.
Yes, it's so funny. I always joke that I'm going to start writing picture books about butterflies and flowers, and because everything I write is too scary for my children to read. And I look back and I'm like, oh, I used to do that. Only I would do poetry for children's magazines and things like that. So.
Well, but your first novel was Living in Shadows, so that's a paranormal YA. How did you go from kids' poetry to that dramatic shift to scary YA?
Well, the reality is I've always loved the scary stuff. It's always been my favorite thing personally to read and my favorite thing to watch on television or in the movies. If I have an opportunity to sit down and relax and watch a movie, it's always going to be something scary. But when I started writing, I thought that I was supposed to be a picture book writer. I don't know why I thought that. I just thought, oh, you know, I have an elementary education degree and I have small children and certainly writing a picture book won't be that hard. You know, turns out
right.
Writing picture books is like the hardest thing I've ever tried to do, and I'm terrible at it. So Every time I would take a picture book manuscript to a conference, I'd have it critiqued, and I'd get the same feedback. You know, basically, you're a really great writer, but maybe you should try to look at writing something longer, because all my picture books were like 5,000 words, which, you know, we know they're supposed to be like 500.
Yeah.
So, I said, okay, if I'm going to dive into writing a novel, it needs to be something that I can enjoy reading myself, or that I would have loved to pick up as a teenager. And I kind of looked back on what my favorite book was as a teenager, and it was this little obscure book that nobody has ever heard of called Trick or Treat. And I still have that book. I've read it so many times. I have given it to my children to read as they turn into teenagers themselves. And it's just this really great, creepy story that has kind of a twist to it. And so I said, I'm going to write something like that. And so then I sat down and wrote Living in Shadows and had so much fun doing it. I just haven't ever looked back to the butterflies and flower poems.
Yeah. Now, Living in Shadows, that's, you can find that on Amazon, but are you, did you say you're going to come out with another version of that, or you're going to re-release it?
Yeah, that one I wrote with the intention of it being a series. And when my agent sold it, we sold it to a small press, and I found out probably like 3 to 5 months after it was published that they had a clause in their submission guidelines saying that they wouldn't accept manuscripts that had LGBTQ characters. And I was just very thrown off by that and offended by that. And when I asked them to remove that, they didn't want to remove that. And so I just ended up taking my rights back and saying, you know what, it's not worth it to me to have it published if that's the home it's going to be at. I'm just going to take it back, and hopefully it'll be out there again someday. And I keep, my agent kind of thought, well, if you write the second one, maybe we can, you know, readdress it and put it out there as a set to a different publisher.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of joke, I think I have post-traumatic stress from all of that, so I never can really, like, sit down and dive back into that character. So I just keep writing
it.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that kind of bad taste in your mouth kind of thing from, you know, the difficulties. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Your latest book is a graphic novel. I mean, you seem to be able to do just about anything there. Piper was published by Penguin in the fall of 2017. Now, I want to read, School Library Journal said, quote, a moving graphic novel about isolation, love, and retribution. This dark version of a familiar tale will remain with readers long after the last page is turned, unquote. So to start with, just in case there's anybody out there who is unfamiliar with the legend, would you outline it for us?
Yeah, well, basically it's a happy little tale about a very strange man who comes to a community that's completely ridden with rats. And this is in the medieval times when rats were really the culprits for spreading disease. And so it's really a problem to have rats infesting the community. And he comes in, he has this magical ability to control the rats with his music. And he's able to rid the community of the rats. However, the community then decides that they're not going to pay him for his services. So in retribution, he takes the children from them. The interesting fact is it's truly a legend that's based in some little root of fact, because as we were researching this mm-hmm. book, we found some of the very first records from Hamelin, Germany, talk about a strange man that came to town in pied clothing, and all the children left and followed him away. So we don't really know why they left for the Crusades.
So that was in the 1200s, right, that happened?
Yes. Yeah.
The real thing. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a bit of truth there. There's the legend, and of course it got the, you know, the fairy tale treatment and everything, the Grimm treatment. So in the course of writing your novel, your graphic novel, where did you decide to depart from the basic legend, and why did choices?
I think we tried to stay true to the legend as best we could, but we knew that we didn't want to tell it from the same perspective that it had been told from before. And we just kind of thought about what would be the most interesting character for the Pied Piper to come in contact with and form a relationship with. And we thought to have Magdalena, an outcast in this community who is deaf because of some actions caused by the community, something that was done to her as a child, we thought that would be a really interesting relationship to explore, because she would then become the one person that the piper wouldn't be able to control because she can't hear his music. So we really kind of just took it from Magdalena's perspective and kind of made it this story about this strong woman who ultimately has some difficult decisions to make, and really has a learning and growing experience through this tragedy that comes upon her community. But she ends up basically kind of becoming a hero and just really growing as a person. So
my favorite was where she would make up the stories herself,
yeah,
and have different endings. You know, if she, I really, really liked that. And her, the elderly woman who took care of her, you know, would write them down. I just thought that was great. So your co-author is Jay Asher, author of 13 Reasons Why. How was it working with a collaborator? I mean, it's a new field because it's graphic novel, and you're also working in with a collaborator. Were there any difficulties that came up, or how did it
go? No, it was really fun. I really love working with other people on projects. I kind of find, you know, my Monsters of the Midwest, I co-wrote with one of my best friends, and The Piper, I co-wrote with Jay. I just have a lot of fun kind of bouncing ideas off other people that have a similar mindset as mine. For Jay and I, when we started working on this, we actually wrote it as a screenplay. We didn't intend for it to be a book at all.
Oh, really?
So that's a little,
okay.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a twist on the backstory. We wrote a feature-length film, and we gave it to Jay's film agent at the time. And there's kind of like this, a disconnect between Hollywood and authors, where, you know, they prefer if an author is going to give them something, it has a book with it, because then you have that cross promotion piece and it's an easier sell when you put it in front of an audience. And so we kind of kept, you know, we wanted to sell it as a feature film and be done with it, but we kept kind of getting the feedback that we would probably have an easier time of selling it if it was actually a book first. And we just decided that because we had so much visual in our mind as we were creating it, you know, we were kind of thinking of that Sleepy Hollow movie that has Johnny Depp in it. And
we just saw
so many awesome visuals. We said, well, we don't want to write it as a straight up novel. It really needs to be a graphic novel if we're going to make it into a book. So that's what we did.
Okay. And they're popular.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm just curious how did you and Jay meet?
He actually came and spoke at one of our conferences. I was an assistant regional advisor for the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators in the state of Minnesota, and he came and spoke at our conference. And the ironic piece of it is it kind of goes back to that book I mentioned that I loved as a child, that Trick or Treat book. We did like a icebreaker thing at the beginning of the conference, and everyone went around the room and said what their favorite book was. And of course, everyone else was naming off these great literary works. And then they get to me and I'm like, Trick or Treat. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, Jessica, you're so embarrassing. And Jay actually went home after the conference and he sent me a picture of his copy of Trick or Treat on his bookshelf. And I was like, dude, we can totally be friends. And we realized, you know, we just kind of had a lot of similar interests. And he was so excited about my Ghost Stories Inc. group, and he would always be begging to tag along with us on Ghost Hunts. And so he just kind of became like this brother within my GSI group. And so we just
nice.
Became good friends and had fun bouncing ideas off each other. So.
Well, one last question about the graphic novel. What are some of the differences when you were writing that and the traditional novel, and how closely did you work with the illustrator, Jeff Stokely, is it?
Yep, Jeff Stokely. We were so lucky because we got to pick our illustrator, and we actually gave Penguin, I think, 3 or 4 different illustrators that we liked, and then they went out to the illustrators, but we said Jeff is our number one choice. He actually lived in the same town as Jay at the time, and they didn't even know it. They didn't know that they were basically
oh, wow.
neighbors within the same community. But a comic book store owner recommended Jay look at some of his work when he stopped in there and was like, I need to look at some graphic novels. And so we both kind of fell in love with just the images that he had created for some of his other pieces that he had done. And it just felt like really the right tone. And when Penguin pitched it to him, he said, oh, I've really been wanting to do some Germanic folklore. And we're like, what?
Wow.
Who's sitting around thinking they want to do Germanic folklore? But here you go. So he was excited about it.
Alistair, weren't you saying that the other day? That you were really interested.
Exactly. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was so serendipitous. It all just kind of fell together. And I know a lot of times, you know, you don't have a whole lot of say, but Penguin was really great about sending us, like, the character sketches so we could kind of get a feel. And we pretty much loved everything they sent. I mean, Jeff is such a talented artist that there's almost nothing that I could ever complain about except for that main image of the Piper that he sent us. And he didn't look like what I had in mind. And when we were writing this, my daughter was doing a play at one of the theaters here, and there was a child supervisor that I always would tell Jay, I'm like, he looks just like what I think the Piper looks like. So when I saw the pictures that they sent for the character sketch of the paper, I actually went to Facebook and I pulled an image of this poor guy off the internet and I sent it to Penguin and I said, here, this is what the Piper's supposed to look like. And then Jeff went back and just tweaked a few things and sure enough, there he is.
Oh, great. So did you give him, you said you basically wrote a screenplay, so you gave him that manuscript or and let him just kind of interpret it? From there?
Yep, for the most part, yeah. We didn't end up giving him a specific graphic novel manuscript. It's basically, they're very similar, except that we didn't actually go in and hash out, like, where the different images would be and what the different panels would be and that sort of thing. We kind of let him have fun doing that. And the other thing we did do so that we could kind of keep the same images and the vision together is we created a Pinterest page that was just a private one for the three of us, and we would put pictures on there for Jeff to look at, and he could use that as reference to kind of like what we were thinking as we were creating it.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So now you combine your love of writing history and paranormal to establish the group Ghost Stories, Inc. So who makes up the group, and are you still investigating haunted locations, and why?
Well, the group is, I have Sean Spinks, who is a really great artist. I have Sean McCann, who is an internationally renowned street artist. So he actually goes around the world and creates art on the street with usually chalk, and then it rains and it washes away. He's incredible. And then I have Natalie Fowler, who is my co-writer on Monsters of the Midwest. And she's, I always joke, she's a recovering attorney, and she's a really awesome historian. So she can really dig in and do research on locations when we go. And then we have Joshua Sterling Bragg, who is a film producer and filmmaker in LA, who has done some work for us in that vein. And then myself. And yeah, we still go ghost hunting. We've been from LA to New York and several places in between. Because a lot of us have children and it's hard for us to go to those fun places as often as we'd like, we've kind of settled into a routine of doing events here in Minnesota at the Palmer House Hotel at least once a year. And then we do some events sometimes at Four Paws. But Palmer House has been on Ghost Adventures a couple of different times. It's super duper awesomely haunted. And so what we do is we do events that include writing workshops and art workshops throughout the day. And then at the end of that day, we have a ghost hunt in the evening. So
I have a theory that creative minds like attract things, you know, I don't know specifically ghosts or something like, but a whole group of really creative people in the basement of a haunted hotel just seems like an antenna, you know.
And at the Palmer House, that place is, I love to do events there because I know that people are never going to leave disappointed. I mean, we had a full body apparition speak to one of our attendees at an event one time, and it was witnessed by multiple people. It's just seriously that haunted. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Creepy.
What was that caught on any equipment or anything?
No, it wasn't caught on equipment because we weren't doing an investigation at the time. We were kind of like in between. We had done the workshops during the day,
okay.
And everyone was like kind of on their own to go have dinner or whatever. And I had just gone upstairs to take a nap because I'm in my 40s and I can't hang till 1 o'clock in the morning unless I have a nap somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I had just missed it, but one of the members of my group, Sean McCann, who is not prone to, like, making anything up, he actually saw it happen, and he was like, it was very weird.
So how do you prepare for an investigation?
Well, if it's a place that we haven't been before, Natalie and I will try to get as much background information as the places we possibly can. If it's someplace where we can get to, like, the local historical society and pull information that way, we love to do that. And then we just kind of try to piece the history together so we understand, you know, what this house or this building has been all about. One of my favorite mm-hmm. places that we've done is called Four Paws, and it's formerly a private residence, and now it's a restaurant. It's a very fancy restaurant, and everybody knows the story about this maid who had an affair with the original owner and became pregnant and then committed suicide. But there was also all of these years of history where it was a boarding house, and nobody knew anything about that. Nobody really had dove into that piece of the history. And so when Natalie and I got our hands on investigating there, we went in and we found the names of everyone who had ever rented a place there. And we actually were able to kind of identify some of the other spirits that they were having interactions with throughout the house and kind of give them this chunk of history that they didn't have before, which is kind of cool.
What was the name of the restaurant?
Four Paws. And if you look on my website, I think there's a link there for a news piece that was done on me last year, and that's us investigating Four Paws.
All right. Now, Ghost Stories, Inc. produced an anthology of ghost stories called Night Visions. And the first story in that collection is yours. It's titled Repeated. And you mentioned that it was inspired by the Palmer House Hotel. Would you describe your actual visit to the hotel that inspired that, and then perhaps read an excerpt from the story for us?
Oh, sure. I hadn't thought about reading one out of there, but I do have it in front of me.
I mean, read whatever you like, but...
Yeah, nope. I grabbed the Monsters of the Midwest book because I kind of, with a lot of love, call that my toilet book. Like, you can read that, a story out of there on the toilet.
That does sound very enticing, though. Maybe we should go with that.
So when you said a five-minute story, I'm like, I'll grab the toilet book. That's totally a five-minute story. One of the residents – oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Beth.
I was just going to say, one of the residents' ghosts at the Palmer House Hotel is a woman named Annie, who they don't really know for sure. They are kind of getting information about her from psychics who have been there and kind of give the impression of this woman named Annie who may have been a prostitute or, you know, a woman of the night or whatever at some point in time. And so I stay in that room quite a lot when I go there. I just really, I like the space and I kind of like the energy of that room. So I like to stay in there. I'm sorry, Lucy. I'm getting my ghost confused. This is Lucy's room. So this story was inspired by my time staying in Lucy's room. There's a lot of ghosts at the Palmer House, so sometimes I have a hard time keeping them all straight.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, Lucy was supposed to be a former prostitute, and it was kind of rumored that maybe she had been murdered by another gentleman who had lived in the hotel whose name was Raymond, who they think haunts the room across the hall from her. So I'm probably going to kind of start in the middle then if I'm going to read out of this.
Okay.
I have a woman named Beth who has basically been abducted from a mall parking lot, and her abductor has taken her back to this hotel. And the hotel in the story is empty. It's not currently being used. And that came to me because I know when the owner was telling me when she bought it, this was kind of how it had been to her. It had been empty for a period of time and they had to do a lot of repairs. And so it's kind of envisioning it the way that it was when the owners, Kelly, bought it. So now Beth is actually chained to a sink in the bathroom up in Lucy's room. Beth held her breath as she listened for any sign that the man might be in the room before using one hand to slide the chains around the pipe from the corner of the bathroom wall up to the base of the sink. She moved the plastic zip tie that secured her wrist to the chain a fraction of an inch toward her hand, just enough for her to see the bloody lines around her wrist she had created by trying to pull it off. She had abandoned any hope that when she... I'm sorry, excuse me. She had abandoned any hope of that when she saw the blood dripping from her arm. For a moment, she worried she might have accidentally slit her wrist with the tie. She found a certain satisfaction in the idea that she could die from a self-inflicted wound. At least then, she wouldn't give that sick bastard the satisfaction of doing it himself. He had attached her to the pipe while she was unconscious. She thought he had killed her, like he said he was going to. She felt a twinge of disappointment when she'd woken up, but it was quickly replaced with a determination to survive. The chain prevented her from standing up completely. She straightened her legs, but her back remained hunched, causing her ligaments to stretch painfully. Beth had very little sense of time, but she could hear music playing from somewhere in the hotel. She tried to stand and stretch her legs every couple songs. If she sat too long, her legs would completely fall asleep, and she wanted to be ready to run if she ever got the chance. That music... It was as if it came from a different time. It reminded Beth of the music she'd heard in a Western movie she'd once watched with her father. The thought of her father made her choke up on a sob. He could never get over losing her. She had to get out of this somehow and get home to her parents. She settled back onto the floor and closed her eyes, allowing the tears to warm her cheeks. "He'll be coming soon," a voice whispered from somewhere across the room. Beth had not seen her unlucky roommate. She'd only heard her speak a few times. She knew her name was Lucy, although she wasn't certain when the girl had introduced herself. "Why is he doing this?" Beth whimpered, more to herself than to the other girl. "I've seen him do it many times. It never ends well." Lucy's voice trailed off on the last word. Beth pulled her knees to her chest. The darkness of the room was nearly blinding. The small window across the room had been covered with a torn sheet that blocked out most of the streetlight's illumination. Wiping away her tears with her one free hand, she crouched again, this time not to keep the circulation from going to her feet, but to get closer to the sink. "I'm not going to let him kill me," she said, running her free hand along the pipe. Starting at the wall, she slowly moved up to the base of the sink. Just before metal met porcelain, she felt a ring. Using the hand tied to the pipe, she grasped the pipe below the ring, and with the other hand, she grabbed the pipe above. She pushed and pulled, trying desperately to pull the pipes apart. "They've rusted together," Lucy whispered. Beth continued pulling and pushing on the pipe. "There has to be a way." The sound of the door creaking open made Beth freeze. "He's back," Lucy's voice was tight with urgency. Heavy footsteps crossed the room. Soon the man stood above her, his face twisted into a maniacal smile. Beth began frantically pulling at the pipe again, her eyes wide with terror, darted from the man to the pipe and then back to the man. She kicked at him wildly, one shoe still on, the other somewhere in the parking lot that now seemed a lifetime away. Then it happened. The pipe miraculously pulled away from the wall. She slid the chain down over the round metal cap that had secured the pipe to the wall, her hand still bound by the zip tie that had been fastened through a link in the chain. Beth swung her arms in front of her body, whipping the man in the face with the metal link that had bound her to the sink. He cried out and stumbled back as she scrambled to her feet and rushed past him. She felt his hands wrap around her ankle as she ran, causing her to careen forward. She tried to break her fall by grabbing at the sheet crudely hanged from the nails above the window in front of her. She pulled it down with her, letting the dull light of the street lamps below brighten the darkness of the room before her face smacked into the window pane. Blood immediately gushed from her nose. The man was on her before she could push herself up from the floor. He rolled her over and straddled her body, putting his weight on her stomach, pinning her helplessly to the floor. His hands once again wrapped around her throat, Blood trailed from the forehead, from his forehead where the chain had made contact with his face, dripping from his chin. His eyes, rimmed with ashen circles, were dark and cold. An evil smile split his mouth, revealing crooked teeth yellowed from the tar of cigarettes. As their senses were swallowed into the darkness of the man's death grip, Beth saw the girl standing just behind him. Her dress was from another time, like the music Beth had heard. She looked as if she had stepped out of a black and white photo from the 1800s. Lucy seemed to flicker, and for a moment, Beth could see right through her. "Take my hand." Lucy's voice seemed to wrap Beth like a warm blanket as her body began to tremble until it became still. Beth felt herself being pulled away from her motionless body. She stood beside the girl, both of them looking down at her lifeless form pinned beneath the man. "Am I dead?" Beth asked, her voice shaking, afraid she already knew the answer. "Yes," Lucy replied. "Are you dead?" "I have been for many years." She put a hand on Beth's shoulder, which seemed strange to Beth as she could feel a touch on her shoulder as she looked down at her own dead body. "You have been dead for many years as well." "What?" Beth asked, a new wave of panic washing over her. "No, I'm right there. He just killed me." Beth pointed toward the floor. "He murdered me right there." Only instead of her body, she saw a small suitcase opened on a foldable rack positioned under the window. The window, where she had moments before ripped the grungy sheet from a rusted nail, was now dressed in wooden panels and a pale blue valance. Beth spun around, looking into the bathroom. The busted headboard that had rested against the wall was replaced with a large mattress framed by ornate antique wooden posts. A man and a woman sat on the bed, their eyes darting around the room. "What was that?" the woman asked, her voice tight with fear. "I don't know," the man replied. He cleared the cobwebs of sleepiness from his throat as he grabbed the phone on the nightstand. "Yes, this is room 17. We cannot sleep in this room," he said firmly into the receiver. "I know you warned us, but the pipes in the bathroom have been banging all night, and now we just heard a terrible crash against the wall." I'll leave it there. It goes on a little longer, but...
Oh, wow. That's great. So that room is the room that you actually stayed in as well at the Palmer House?
Yes. Yeah, I've stayed there many times.
That's fantastic. I kind of wanted you to keep going.
I could, but I'm like, oh my gosh, it's going to go on for like three or four more minutes. You're just going to have to buy the book.
All right, all right. You talked me into it.
I wanted to talk about some of your other books, but I'm going to just up with, what are you working on now? What's coming up next?
Well, I feel like I'm all over the place right now. I'm directing a documentary right now. I've been really putting a lot of time into that, and it's kind of a deviation from my normal type of work. It's something a little more serious and about a contemporary issue in society that we're kind of dealing with, and so that's taking a lot of my time. As far as books go, I'm working on a middle grade series that's super fun. I'm working on that with my co-writer, Natalie Fowler, who I did the Monsters of the Midwest book with. And then I'm working on a couple of adult books, which has been sort of fun.
Scary?
One is scary. And the other one is more about generational poverty and abuse, which is also scary in its own right.
Yeah, that's scary.
Scary.
Yeah. Yeah. None of
okay,
the
cast so
say that. It's all dark and sad and scary. Yes.
So if people want to find out more about you and your work and everything, let's see, you are at, your website is www.jessicafreeburg.com. And
yes.
How about your Twitter handle, Instagram, what are those?
Yep, I just keep all of that super simple. It's all just my name, so it's just at Jessica Freeburg. I also have a Facebook page that people can connect with me on. I have an author page. I'm usually pretty lenient about accepting friend requests, too, on my personal Facebook page if it's sometime within a recent interview or something, a presentation that I've done. Instagram, Twitter, I love connecting with people. I think it's really fun to connect with fans.
Well, it's been wonderful having you on tonight. And again, I've got, there are other books that I'd like to talk about, Monsters of the Midwest and Collapse and Chaos and Fight for Survival. There's a lot there to go through. And so I hope we can have you back sometime.
I would love that. This has been a lot of fun.
All right. Alistair, I turn it over to you.
All right. Again, thank you, Jessica, and sincerely, you're welcome back anytime. So we'll be in touch. We'll you know, you have something new come out, whatever. It's yeah. So yeah, I hope you come back. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Alistair Cross, and I'm here with QL Pierce and author Jessica Freeberg. And until next week, we wish you haunted nights, sweet screams, and.
Be sure to check under the bed before you turn off the light.
All right. Thank you for listening.
Haunted Nights, live with Tamara Thorne and Alistair Cross.